you to open up your Bibles with me to the book of John, John chapter 4. If you don't have a Bible and you'd like one, our ushers will be in the aisles now, ready and willing to give you a Bible. If you don't have a Bible at all, now you do. You can keep that one and call it your very own. If you want to use your iPad or iPhone or some Bible app, that's fine too. Whatever your mode of transportation is, that's great. Just get over to John chapter 4 with it. We started a new series last week entitled Lord of the Rings. And what we're talking about is doing marriage God's way. And what we said last week was marriage is not just something that can be survived, but when we do it God's way, it's actually something that can thrive. That when we do marriage God's way, that marriage union can actually be something that fills our life up with joy and peace and passion. That I really see from Scripture that when this marriage union is right, it causes life to bubble forth out of it and touch every arena of our lives. God wants you to have a great marriage. He wants it to be exciting. He wants it to be fun. He wants it to be passionate. That was God's plan for marriage. We said last week, if we're going to have that type of marriage, then it means we're going to have to do marriage God's way. We can't keep doing it the world's way and expect to experience God's results. No, if we want God's results, then we've got to do this marriage thing God's way. And so that's what we're saying. We want the Lord to be the Lord of our rings, to be the Lord of our marriage. And we said last week that if you're going to get married, you need to have a plan. And we said that to fall in love, it's easy. We said all you need to fall in love is a what? Does anyone remember? A pulse. I heard someone say, yeah, falling in love, all you need to have is a pulse. Just wake up and you can fall in love with something. I mean, it takes no effort. You don't have to work at all to do it. Just live long enough and you'll fall in love with something. We said to fall in love, all you need is a pulse. But we said to stay in love, you need a plan. And what we're trying to do in this series is to give you a plan to stay in love. To give you a plan to have a great marriage. And like we said last week, that when we give you this plan, you're going to see that the plan requires some work. And it requires you doing some things that might not be overly pleasant on your flesh. Things like making yourself the servant of your spouse, preferring them above you, coming down to where they are to minister to them and lift them up higher. And we said, you know, that is hard. And that's not overly pleasant to do that. But we said it's a whole lot easier than having a bad marriage. Being the first to say you're sorry, even when you believe like you're right, that's hard. But it's a whole lot easier than having a bad relationship. It's a whole lot easier than having strife in the home. And so what I want to encourage you to do in this series is to hear the plan, because we're going to give you a plan to execute. But don't just stop at being a hearer. Go out and do some of it. In fact, I probably will guarantee that while I'm standing here and you're sitting there, that while we talk today, the Lord will even put some things on your heart to do. And it'll be something even different than what I'm talking about, but in your heart you realize I need to do something. Did you know that the key to life is submission to God? And when he puts it on your heart to do something and you make a decision to do it, it's going to breathe life into your family. Bring life into your relationship. And so I want to encourage you, if you get something like that on your heart, yeah, I need to do this for my wife, or I need to do that for my husband, or I need to change that in my home, or I need to do this to prepare for a mate, whatever it may be, don't just be a hearer of the word. Be a doer of the word that you've heard. We said, in fact, last week we said that the key to marriage is to make love. a verb. If you're going to have a good marriage, I thought someone first service said a lot, but no, the key to a good marriage is you've got to make love a verb. If you're going to have a great marriage, it's not enough for me to say that I'm in love with my wife. It's not enough for me to feel love for her. If I'm going to have a great marriage, I need to make her feel love by me. He said, I can feel love for my wife all day, but until I give her some evidence that I love her, I could feel that love, but her not feel love by me at all. And so he said, we need to leave some evidence for our wife. If you're a wife, you need to leave some evidence for your husband that you really do love him. Well, what do I mean by evidence? I mean, have you ever seen one of those crime shows or detective shows where evidence was left at a scene and they heard a testimony from someone about something, or they picked up something, and when they looked at it, it built a case that so-and-so did the crime. That's what we're talking about in marriage. Don't commit any crimes. But what we're getting at is this, is leave evidence that your wife or your husband can come to the conclusion, he really does still love me. That a great marriage is, it's showing love. Love as a verb. So leave evidence to show your spouse that you love him, that you love her. Today, for this service, we're going to move on with that in mind as our foundation. And we're actually going to do some live marriage counseling. But before we do that, and I know everyone's excited about it, I see it on your face. But before we do that, let me build up to where these individuals are. A lot of people think that if you just took two good people and they get married, that's going to equal a great marriage. And I wish that was the case, but apparently that's not, due to the high divorce rate within our nation. That even we saw last week where Paul wrote to the church and said, hey guys, you need to teach the older women to pull aside the younger women and to teach them how to love their husbands and how to love their kids. Now, these were Christian women. These were churched women. But he said that they still need to be taught how to love their husband and how to love their kids. See, the reality is this. If all of us came into marriage with healthy hearts, we could have a good marriage. Now, what I mean by that, a healthy heart, is I was reading something the other day from marriage experts. And they were saying that if you're going to have a great marriage, it consists of a couple of ingredients. I'm going to read some of those to you today for the sake of making a point. They said, if you want a great marriage, a great household, then in that marriage, there's got to be some respect. That there's respect given from one party to the other. That in that marriage, there's comfort, meaning that you can be yourself, you can be comfortable, and your other spouse still likes you. That's a good thing, right? When you're yourself and they still like you, there ought to be a level of comfort there. A good marriage, they said, has acceptance, appreciation, affection. That's good, right? It's good to have affection in marriage. Encouragement, support, attention, and approval. Now, I read that list, and after I was done reading it, they were saying that not only does it take these things to have a great marriage and a great household, but in order for your kids to have great marriages when they get older, they need to see these things. Because when they see these things in their household, and those are the types of things that they're going to want to see in their household. When they see it growing up, then that's what they're going to want to take and see in their life when they get older. And if we all had backgrounds like that, where, I mean, we just came from homes where there was acceptance and there was approval and there was affection and there was comfort and there was love and joy and peace. And those were the types of things that we knew how to create because we saw it created for however many years we lived in that household. Then yeah, this marriage thing might be a little bit easier than a lot of people are experiencing. But the reality is that a whole lot of people, and I dare say the majority of people in here even this morning, didn't come from backgrounds like that. They didn't see approval and affection. They saw hurt feelings or manipulation. And instead of seeing comfort, they saw awkwardness. And instead of seeing love, they saw fighting and they saw lying and they saw cheating and they saw someone not come home one night and they saw maybe alcohol abuse or prescription drug abuse. And the danger of seeing that so much is it typically will lead to one of two things. Either number one, and this is what happens the majority of the time, is it's a spiritual law that you become what you behold. And if that's all you see your whole life, then that stuff gets in you. And that behavior gets in you and you start becoming what you beheld. The second thing that it sometimes can do is people get such a deep dislike. You could almost even use the word hate for that type of behavior. That they want to so far remove themselves from that type of behavior that they go to the other extreme. You know what I mean by that? Whereas maybe they saw heavy infighting in a home. They saw that so much that they didn't want any part of that in their life. And so now they just avoid confrontation at all. They don't want any part of it. And they'll shut down as soon as there's just any type of conflict and any type of disapproval. They'll just shut down because they have such a dislike for any type of conflict. And that can lead to issues as well. And so if two people come into a relationship with healthy hearts, then man, that can lead towards a good marriage. But if they're not, then it can lead to some issues. And this is what Paul was trying to get at when he said, do not be unequally yoked. It's not enough for just one person to come in and try to do things right. It's got to be both parties coming together with healthy hearts and making this relationship work. And so with that in mind, we're going to do some live marriage counseling today. Now, you can imagine if I brought you out on stage that you would be a little bit nervous and you'd want people smiling at you and enjoying you being up there. And so I want to encourage you for our couple today that you give them the same treatment you would want, that perhaps not only do you allow them to learn some things today, but maybe, just maybe, you can learn some things from them today. And so I want to introduce to you, they're real shy, but just bear with them. I want to introduce to you today Mr. and Mrs. Mugg. Now, they've been married for quite some time. They got married in 1989. In fact, you can see a picture from their honeymoon. They went to Florida in 1989 after they got married. And they met each other in college. And he had all of his ducks in a row. He had a career path planned out. And she was attracted to the financial stability that it looked like he would bring. And she wanted to have him in her life. And he wanted her because she's a knockout. I mean, just look at her. I mean, and when he saw her, he knew this was something he wanted to someone he wanted to be with. And so when they first started dating, they were just really, really careful with each other. You know, and they may have had a couple of flare-ups here or there, but see, he's still trying to win her affections. And she's still trying to win his love. And so with that, they're real nice and sweet and gentle to each other, because he doesn't want her running away from him, and she doesn't want him running away from her. And so they're just real gentle with each other. And there may be some flare-ups, but they just push it underneath the rug because they want to be with each other. And these feelings start to grow and grow to where we talked about like last week, that these feelings grow, and finally they find themselves at the altar, and they got married, and they started a life together. But about a month into the relationship, Mr. Mugg did something that made Mrs. Mugg very upset. And when they started talking about it, they weren't so gentle anymore. And what was in Mr. Mugg came out. And what was in Mrs. Mugg came out. And Mrs. Mugg turns to Mr. Mugg and she said, "Where did all of that come from?" And Mr. Mugg turns to Mrs. Mugg and says, "I didn't know you had that in you." And she's wanting to know, where did that anger come from? And that doesn't make him happy. And so they bump again. And he's saying, "Well, you wouldn't see this anger if you didn't bump me." And she said, "Well, you wouldn't see me get mad at you if you didn't bump me." And so she goes over and runs to her sister. And she says to her sister, "I just didn't know he was like that. I had never seen anything like that before." And he runs over. Well, we don't know where guys go. I mean, really, where do guys go? I mean, he maybe looked in the mirror or thought to himself, "I just don't understand her. I thought I knew her. You think you know someone. I thought I knew, but I've never seen that come out of her before." And so they get back together, and things are fine for a while. But then sure enough, they bump each other again. And what was in Mr. Mugg came out. And he's upset that it came out. But in his mind, it's Mrs. Mugg who's bringing it out. And Mrs. Mugg's upset that, you know, she's having this type of behavior. But in her mind, it's not her fault, because Mr. Mugg is the one bumping her. And if Mr. Mugg didn't bump her, then these pink beads wouldn't come out. And so Mrs. Mugg thinks, "What I need to do is to find a new mug. You know, if I had Mr. Glass or Mr. Pitcher or Mr. Someone else, then I wouldn't have all of these things to deal with." And Mr. Mugg is thinking, "What I need to do is to just separate myself a little bit from her, because it's Mrs. Mugg who's bringing this stuff out. And so I'll stay at work a little bit longer, and I'll be gone a little bit more, because Mr. Mugg doesn't like that the blue beads are coming out. In fact, a lot of time, Mr. Mugg, he's ashamed of the blue beads that are coming out. And deep down, Mrs. Mugg doesn't like the pink beads either. And she sees when she's alone that, you know, I probably could have said some things differently. And I don't know where all that anger came from, but the reality is Mr. Mugg, he thinks that the reason why the blue beads are coming out of him is because Mrs. Mugg keeps bumping him. And Mrs. Mugg thinks that the reason why the pink beads are coming out of her is because Mr. Mugg keeps bumping her. But the reality is this: if Mr. Mugg didn't have blue beads in him, they would never come out. And the reality for Mrs. Mugg is, if she didn't have pink beads in her, they would never come out. See, from our past experiences, from what we saw as kids to past relationships that we've had, things have gotten put in us. And if I come into marriage and I'm full of the right things, then when I get bumped, the right things will come out. I'll give you an example between two extremes. Jesus and the Pharisees. Both of them are just living their life. But something the Pharisees sometimes did caused Jesus to bump into them. Sometimes some of the things that Jesus did caused the Pharisees to bump into him. When the Pharisees bumped into Jesus, guess what came out? A whole lot of anger. A whole lot of pent-up resentment. A whole lot of pride, thinking he's coming in and he's going to take their followers. And all of that's in them. So when Jesus bumps them, that stuff comes out so much so they nail him to a cross. Jesus obviously is getting bumped by the Pharisees, but guess what happens when he gets bumped? Stuff's coming out of him, but it's not negative stuff. Guess what it is? It's love. And it's patience. And it's forgiveness. And it's, Lord, forgive them, for they don't know not what they do. And it's excuses, and it's trying to pull them close. Why? Because that's what's in Jesus. Here's the reality, ladies and gentlemen. There is no such thing as a bump-free life. In this world, you will get bumped. Now, it just so happens that in marriage, you get bumped more and often bigger bumps than in any other type of relationship because that's the one you're around most. Does that make sense? I guarantee you that if you're dealing with anger issues in marriage because they're bumping you, you can take those same issues on the job, and if another employee bumps you, they see the same thing. Or a relationship with a friend didn't work out, and so the pink beads come out there too. Or a relationship with a mother or a father or mother-in-law, something happens and they bump you and that same pink bead comes out because that's what's in us. And the only way for this issue to ever be resolved is for not for the Mr. Mug and Mrs. Mug to bump each other less, although you should aim to bump as little as you can. But the reality is that anything that's close creates friction. That's how friction's created. Two things are close. One thing goes one way. The other thing goes the other way. When that happens, friction is created. Bumps happen. You cannot control all the bumps. Some of them you can help eliminate, but there will be differences of opinion. There will be two people seeing things, two things, different ways, and all of those things. But what you can control is what comes in you or comes out of you when you get bumped. I've never done a counseling session ever where a Mrs. Mug walked in and said, the problem is all me. I mean, it's me. I'll just be honest. The problem, it's me. And I know if I went and talked to him that way, then I'd get better results. And I know if I'd just be nicer, then I'd see better results. The problem is me. That has never happened. She says the problem's all him. But you know what's fascinating? When Mrs. Mug says the problem is all Mr. Mug, in Mr. Mug's mind, the problem is not him at all. I've never had a Mr. Mug come and say, you know what, she's right. She's right. It's all me. And you know what? I need to take the time to understand her more and to listen. I'm just not a good listener, Pastor. I've never had that happen before. You know what Mr. Mug always does? Nuh-uh. The problem is Mrs. Mug. Mrs. Mug's got all these pink beads that keep coming out and I'm tired of it. And she brings out the worst of me. And if she didn't do that, she wouldn't see this. Do you know what that is? That's a recipe for misery. See, Mrs. Mug's got to wake up to the fact that I can't change Mr. Mug. That's between him and God. The only thing I can change is Mrs. Mug. And what I can do is fill me up with the right things so that when Mr. Mug bumps me, because he will bump, that the right stuff comes out. That's what Jesus was trying to get across, where he said, you know, you're to hate your enemies, and if they hit you, you hit them, and if they steal from you, you steal from them. He's trying to build in a new mindset, and he says, no, instead of all that, love your enemies. When they curse you, bless them. When they wrong you, pray for them. What's he saying? Get the right stuff in you, so when they do the wrong stuff, the good stuff in you comes out. You know what happens when that happens? Is when Mrs. Mug gets the right stuff in her, and they bump, and the pink beads come out, instead of it being the wrong stuff, guess what comes out? Love, mercy, forgiveness, care, respect, prayer. Guess what happens? Mr. Mug starts seeing that. You know what it does to Mr. Mug? It makes him want to get the right stuff in him. And instead of him wanting to run over here, it makes him want to run to Mrs. Mug. And the same is true with Mr. Mug. And Mr. Mug got filled with the right things, and when they bumped, and she's seeing love, and she's seeing mercy, and she's seeing, hey, let's come and let's pray over this. You know what? I can only see that this is leading to tension. Let's just stop and pray about this. You know, I know you want this, and I want this, but let's just pray and ask God what He wants. And Mrs. Mug sees that. Guess what that does to Mrs. Mug's heart? It softens it. Not only to the Lord, but to Mr. Mug. And you have a great relationship, because oftentimes the bumps just bring out the best in you. Flowers are coming out. Love notes are. Why? Because you got bumped. That's what's in you. So here's what I'm getting at, because like I said, a lot of us, I only got 6 minutes left. It's 10:54, and it's in big red numbers back there. And so just bear with me, because you'll have to come back next Sunday. That's the beauty of being a pastor. I get you again and again and again and again. But the biggest thing Mr. Mug can do to have a great marriage is for Mr. Mug to go to work on himself. It's real easy to go to work on the other person and to see what they need to change. You know, it's a lot harder to wake up and look in the mirror and see what I can change. And that's where Mr. Mug grows up in the Lord. And that's where Mrs. Mug does. An example of this is found in John chapter 4. You know that scripture you turned to a while back? In John chapter 4, Jesus is meeting with a woman at a well in Samaria, and he comes up to her and asks for her to draw out some water, and she didn't want to. And so anyway, they engage in a conversation, and Jesus says, you know, if you knew who I was, you would ask me for water. And so with that in mind, let's pick up and read this. John chapter 4 and verse 10, Jesus answered and said unto her, if thou knewest the gift of God and who it is that saith to thee, give me drink, thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given you living water. The woman said unto him, sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence thou hast thou living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well and drank thereof himself and his children and his cattle? And Jesus answered and said unto her, whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. Verse 14. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. The woman said unto him, sir, give me this water that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. Now Jesus is about to get into it. And Jesus said unto her, go call your husband and come hither. Hither is a great word. Verse 17. The woman answered and said, I have no husband. And Jesus said unto her, thou hast well said, I have no husband, for thou hast had five husbands, and he whom thou now hast is not your husband, and that you have spoken truly. This woman was either the most unlucky person in the world to go through five husbands, or she had something in her that was missing. I'm guessing it's the latter. And she's thinking, you know, if I want a better life, I've got to marry the perfect person. Oh, I meet a lot of single people like that. I can't enjoy my life until I marry the perfect person. Can I suggest to you this morning that the key to a good life is not in marrying the perfect person, but in being the right person? Can I suggest to you that if you do get married, someone who you think is perfect, they are going to bump you. And if you're not right on the inside, what you thought was perfect will be a bigger headache than you ever bargained for. Listen to me when I tell you this. This woman went through five husbands. Five husbands. Couldn't find joy or lasting success in any of them. She's looking for something to make her life worthwhile, and surely it must be the husband who's not doing it right. So let me change from this. And she goes from one to two, and then something's wrong with two, so let me find another, and to three, and to, well, something's wrong with Mr. Four, and something's wrong with Mr. Five, until finally it seems as if she gave up on this whole marriage thing, and now she's just going to partner up. And the man she's with now is not her husband, because after all, I've been married five times, so marriage is not the answer. It must be some other type of relationship. And so she's trying to do things a different way because what she has been doing is not working. But guess where that road's going to lead? The same place all the other roads did, alone and looking for someone else. Why did Jesus go through Samaria? In chapter or verse 1, it says he must needs go through here. It's for this one woman. Why for this one woman? Because he needed to teach her that the only thing that can provide you life is me. That if you want a good life, the answer is not found in another husband. It's in your relationship with me. Why? Because Christ changes us. I'll tell you this story, and I'm starting, beginning to close. I was listening to a guy preach on this subject of marriage, and he was talking a little bit along these lines, and he gave the story of this man named Truett Cathy. He's the founder of God's Chicken, Chick-fil-A. And Truett Cathy is a very wealthy individual and has established a great company and all of those types of things. And Truett has taken a lot of that wealth that he's accumulated and not only made his life better, but made the lives of other people better. He's blessed to be a blessing. And there was a particular young man that Truett had his eye on. It was a young guy. I want to say he was 19, but in that type of age bracket. And Truett wanted to be a blessing to him. He wanted to give him a sum of money as well as give him a new car. That's a good thing. And so he brought the guy to him, and he said, I want you to listen to some of these tapes. And the tapes was tapes of some motivational speaker. And he said, I think that on these tapes, there's wisdom that can enhance your life and make it better. And so he gave the young man the tapes, and the young man did what a lot of young people do. He kept putting off what was needful for that which was urgent. And there was something that he needed to hear on those tapes, but other things kept coming up that was robbing him from listening to what he needed to be listening to. And Truett ran by him, and he said, hey, have you listened to those tapes? And the young man said, well, I haven't gotten around to it. Truett said, well, you need to take some time to listen to it. This happened again a second time. Truett said, have you listened to those tapes? And he said, I kind of listened to some of them, but I haven't really gotten into them. And finally, Truett called the young man and said, you need to come up to my office and give me the tapes back. And the young man understood, you know, he needs his tapes back. Someone else may need them, and he may need them. So he brings the tapes back to Mr. Truett, and Mr. Truett accepts the tapes. He says, hey, before you go, I want you to listen to something. So he puts in the last tape, I think there were only three, puts in the third tape, and kind of gets to the end of the teaching, fast forwards, and gets to the end of the teaching, presses play, and the motivational speaker's voice is on, and then it cuts off. He's done speaking, but the tape keeps going, and Mr. Cathy's voice comes in on the other, at the end of the tape, and he starts talking to the young man about his life. And he said, because you've taken the time to gain wisdom, and basically it's the principal thing, I want to give you this sum of money, and I want to give you a new car. Meet me at such and such place. But the kid never showed up there. Why? Because he never took the time to listen to the tapes all the way through. Here's the thing about God. You never get the feeling that it's urgent. We know it's needful. We need it. We need time with God. That's a good thing. But it never wears on you like the things of this earth, because God's a gentleman. And we all know, as married people, as single people, that spending time with God's a good thing, like listening to motivational tapes to that young man. That'd be a good thing to do, spend some time with God. And I need to do it. I'll find time to do it. But especially if you're married and you have kids and you got a lot of places to go, a lot of people to see, lots of things to wash, lots of things to clean, lots of things to put up, take down. It's real easy sometimes to not get to what needs to be done as far as our relationship with the Lord, because it doesn't seem urgent. But I'm telling you, spending time with God is a lot like that young man listening to those tapes. And while you're spending time with Him, like listening to those tapes, you'll pick things up along the way that edify your life, improve your life. But at the end of spending time with God on a consistent basis, you notice not only has He blessed your life, but He's changed you. And that from that time with Him on a consistent basis, the right stuff has gotten in you, His love, His joy, His peace. May I submit to you with this, that the first person that Adam and Eve saw was not each other, it was God. Adam walked with God in the cool of the day before Eve ever existed. And when Eve was made, Adam was still asleep. So the first face she saw was not Adam's, but God's. The first conversation Eve had with anyone was not with Adam, it was God. Why did God do it that way? That's the way it needs to be done. Why? Because what do you see happen after the next couple of verses? Adam and Eve do something they regret. They eat of the apple or whatever fruit it was. The whole world falls into chaos. And guess what Adam and Eve start doing? Not arguing with each other. They start running from God. And they're hiding. Remember, God comes down and he's trying to find them. He knows where they are, but He's giving them a chance to show themselves. But they're running and hiding from Him. And God comes down and asks them where they are. And Adam says, "We were hiding ourselves because we were afraid. We heard your voice." And do you notice that first they ran from God, then they started arguing? That after they ran from God, that's when Adam turned to Eve and said, "It was you, it was your fault. It was the reason why I ate of this tree was you, and God, you're the one who brought her to me." And you see, arguing first come into the earth after man ran from God. In the book of Jeremiah, God says, "I asked for your face, but all I saw was your back." And He said, "You want to know why calamity is coming to your city?" Friend, I want to get this across to all not just the married people in here, but the single people. The best thing I can do for my wife is spend time with God. Because my time with Him centers me. When I'm being impatient, my time with Him reveals that. See, the Bible likens the Word of God into a mirror where you can see yourself. How many of you looked in the mirror? You don't have to raise your hand. But before you came to church, you looked in the mirror. Why? You wanted to make sure the tie was straight. You wanted to see what was out of line. That's what time with God does. See, when you spend time with God, your wife doesn't have to tell you you need to be nicer. God is showing it to you. When you're spending time with God, your husband doesn't have to tell you what you need, what he needs. God's showing it to you. That's what His Word is there for. That's what He is there for, as a mirror to show you what needs to be put and lined up into place. I could go on and on and on and on, but we'd bleed over into the next service and they would be mad because your kids are competing with their kids and getting in and out of preschool. But my point is this. Learn the lesson the lady at the well learned that day. He's the fount of living water. And He'll fill me up with the right things, so that when I am bumped, the right stuff comes out. Every head bowed, every eye closed. Oh, you've been a wonderful Lord.